what it does is it pulls Tennessee's law banning gender-affirming care, receiving puberty blockers or hormones for transgender youth. Close to half the states have a law like Tennessee's.
This is a devastating opinion impacting hundreds of thousands of youth and families that are now really, I think, faced with making a decision about, am I going to ask my child to change who they are, or are we going to change where we live?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Australia relaxes blood donation restrictions for gay and bisexual men. The Trump administration defunds queer youth suicide prevention, and the U.S. Supreme Court blocks pediatric gender-affirming health care. Those stories and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Ava Davis.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With a news wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 21st, 2025. A U.S. Supreme Court ruling will allow states to ban gender-affirming health care for transgender young people. More than two dozen states can continue to enforce their bans, and the High Court's June 18th decision encourages others to follow suit. Progressive Justice Sonia Sotomayor's written dissent harshly condemned the majority for refusing to call a spade a spade. All three progressive justices opposed the six conservatives who voted to uphold Tennessee's ban, so it was a purely ideological split. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the majority opinion in the U.S. v. Scametti case. He rejected the plaintiff's constitutional equal protection challenge to Tennessee's ban and threw out their demand for heightened scrutiny in determining its legality. The majority ruled that denying puberty blockers and gender-affirming hormone treatments for trans minors does not discriminate based on transgender status or sex, since it applies equally to both males and females. Roberts asserts that the law targets medical treatments and not personal identities.
Writing for the minority in U.S. v. Scametti, Sotomayor countered that the majority opinion fails because they denied that the law determines access to the covered medications based on the recipient's sex. She warned that the decision invites legislatures to engage in discrimination by hiding blatant sex classifications in plain sight. In her words, the ruling authorizes, without second thought, untold harm to transgender children and the parents and families who love them. Virtually every professional physical and mental health organization in the U.S. supports parent-approved gender-affirming health care for trans minors. Advocates argue that lawmakers and now high court justices are substituting political ideology for sound medical practices. Queer rights defenders find some hope in the fact that the High Court specifically reaffirmed its 2020 Bostock ruling that protects transgender and other queer people from discrimination in the workplace. This Way Out's David Hunt chats with legal scholar Brad Sears about the Supreme Court ruling and its implications following news wrap on most of these same stations.
Most Australian gay and bisexual men and transgender women who have sex with men will finally be able to donate blood without a 3-month celibacy requirement beginning on July 14th. The announcement came this week from Lifeblood, the blood services branch of the Australian Red Cross. As their press release explained, most people, including gay and bisexual men and anyone who takes PrEP, will be able to donate plasma without a wait period, providing they meet all other eligibility criteria. Extensive research and modeling show that there will be no impact to the safety of the plasma supply with this change. Most people in a sexual relationship of 6 months or more with a single partner will be eligible to donate blood. The statement highlights one remaining restriction. Most people with new or multiple partners will also be able to donate blood if they have not had anal sex in the last 3 months. Veteran activist and Let Us Give campaign spokesperson Rodney Croon told The Guardian, "Australian lives will be saved by this overdue and important decision." Lifeblood Chief Medical Officer Dr. Joe Pink expects the change to bring in some 24,000 more individual donors per year and result in 95,000 more annual blood donations.
Funding for suicide prevention programs targeting LGBTQ young people is being eliminated by the Trump administration. The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline Press 3 option for queer youth will close on July 17th. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's own data shows that more than 1.2 million LGBTQ plus young people used 988 Option 3 from its beginning in July 2022 through February 2025. The agency's press release explained that it was making the change to focus on all help seekers. The Trevor Project has received a 30-day notice that its federal funding would be ending. The nonprofit focused on suicide prevention efforts among LGBTQ plus youth estimates that more than 1.8 million queer young people consider suicide each year, and that at least one attempts suicide every 45 seconds. The Trevor Project experienced a record-breaking 700% increase in calls to their hotline on November 6, 2024, the day after Trump was elected to his second non-consecutive presidential term. To Trevor Project CEO James Black, "The fact that this news comes to us halfway through Pride Month is callous, as is the administration's choice to remove the T from the acronym LGBTQ+ in their announcement." Black vowed, "Transgender people can never and will never be erased." The Trevor Project's own hotline pre-existed the federally funded 988 Option 3 line, and that effort will continue despite the termination of the government contract. Black is quick to say, "I want every LGBTQ plus young person to know that you are worthy, you are loved, and you belong." Despite this heartbreaking news, the Trevor Project's crisis counselors are here for you 24/7, just as we always have been, to help you navigate anything you might be feeling right now.
A federal judge is continuing to block the U.S. State Department from denying the option of an X gender marker on U.S. passports. This week, District Judge Julia Kobik expanded a temporary injunction that she first issued in April, halting enforcement of the Trump directive. Six trans and non-binary plaintiffs want to choose the X gender marker on their passports. Kobik concluded that the State Department is discriminating against them on the basis of sex. Her extension of the injunction this week also included class action status to trans people using M or F, as well as to those who want to use X. That now allows all trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming U.S. citizens the chance to apply for an accurate passport. According to Kobik, the State Department's actions affected all of them by preventing them from obtaining passports with a sex marker consistent with their gender identity. White House Deputy Press Secretary Anna Kelly derisively called Judge Kobik's latest decision another attempt by a rogue judge to thwart President Trump's agenda and push radical gender ideology that defies biological truth. The Trump administration already appealed the judge's original April ruling last week. Lee Nalin Sol is with the ACLU's LGBTQ and HIV Project, one of the legal groups fighting for the X option. She applauded the judge's latest action, calling it a historic win in the fight against this administration's efforts to drive transgender people out of public life. Nalin Sol added, "We encourage all class members impacted by this policy to take advantage of this injunctive relief, and we will do everything we can to block this policy permanently."
Finally,
blue sky, smiling at me.
U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance's foray into blue sky turned out to be as popular as his election campaign visit to a donut shop or his recent trip to Greenland. No one knows why Vance decided to join the platform favored by users who've soured on the rabidly right-wing content of Elon Musk's X. It only took 2 days for Vance to become the most blocked account on Blue Sky in its first 4 years of existence. The Veep posted his support for far-right Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas's comments about this week's Scrimmity ruling, particularly that trans youth healthcare relies on questionable evidence. The unofficial data tracker ClearSky counted more than 110,400 users blocking Vance within the first 48 hours of that anti-trans post. Blue Sky users pulled no punches. One wrote, "Dude, WTF are you even doing here?" One suggested Vance should please return to Donald Trump's Truth Social and F off. Nobody cares about your opinion. Another user wrote, "You and Trump and the rest of the clown car cabinet in action and words have proven to be immoral, incompetent, criminal, lying, despicable humans."
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending June 21st, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Ava Davis. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
I'm not a mistake. I'm not your verdict. I wasn't born to be judged. I am the voice you were never taught to hear, but it sings, it beats, it shouts, I'm here.
Transgender people got another legal gut punch when the U.S. Supreme Court upheld Tennessee's ban on pediatric gender-affirming health care. The conservative majority handed down its 6-3 ruling on June 18th. Their decision lowered the bar for establishing the constitutionality of Tennessee's ban, and that imperils the rights of young trans patients in the 20 other states with similar laws, all despite the opposition of every major U.S. medical association. The Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law conducts independent research on sexual orientation and gender identity law and public policy. His founding director, Brad Sears, sat down with This Way Out's David Hunt to unpack the Supreme Court ruling.
In a friend of the court brief filed with the U.S. Supreme Court last September, scholars at the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law argued against Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming care for young people. Laws enacted in conservative states, primarily in the South and Midwest, outlawing puberty-blocking medications and hormone therapy, place unfair burdens on transgender youth and their families, the scholars wrote, forcing them to either travel great distances at great expense to access care or to forego gender-affirming care entirely. Writing for the majority, Chief Justice John Roberts took note of the brief, quoting from page 5, to acknowledge that transgender people do exist, that an estimated 1.6 million Americans over the age of 13 identify as transgender, meaning that their gender identity does not align with their biological sex. But it was downhill from there. I'm David Hunt. I asked Brad Sears, founding director of the Williams Institute, and a longtime legal scholar at the University of California, Los Angeles, to take a deep dive into the court's sometimes tortured reasoning in United States v. Skrmetti. Why don't we start at a pretty high level here? The Supreme Court came in today with the ruling in the Skrmetti case, and this is a Tennessee law that bans gender-affirming health care for minors. I guess not unexpected. What's your reaction?
Yes, I don't think the Supreme Court's decision is unexpected. And so, and you're exactly right. What it does is it upholds Tennessee's law banning gender-affirming care, receiving puberty blockers or hormones for transgender youth. Close to half the states have a law like Tennessee's. Those laws were already in effect. So what the court has said today is there's no constitutional problem with those laws, at least with the constitutional arguments that we heard as part of this case.
Okay, so the question before the court was whether this Tennessee law, SB1, violates the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment. So had the court found that the law violated that clause, what would that have triggered in terms of judicial scrutiny?
One of the main things that the lawyers in this case were arguing for was that the court consider this a form of sex discrimination, that your gender identity is like being male or female, being cis male or female, is your sex, and people were not being allowed to have treatments that are offered to others merely because they were transgender, and this was discrimination based on sex. Well-established precedent that type of discrimination, the court takes a closer look at and really makes sure that any restrictive policy, any burdensome policy has a strong reason for it. So it would have been one outcome of this case would be to say, yes, this is discrimination on the basis of someone's sex. It needs to go back to the lower court to hear more evidence about the burden that it has on transgender people. And then what the state is going to argue is why, even though there is a burden, the law should be permissible. Instead, the court said it's not discrimination based on sex, not necessarily surprising based on the oral arguments, but not that logical, as some of the dissenting justices pointed out. Therefore, we're going to hold these laws to our lowest level of review. And under that level of review, we almost always say the law is okay and this ban is okay.
The sort of rational basis review merely requires the state to have some rational reason for enacting the law. And the Supreme Court found in this case that the rational reason was that the medical treatments were risky. And so therefore the state, in its view, protecting youth from risky or dangerous procedures, could enact this ban.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great description of rational basis review. You nailed it. It even goes one further, is the court will defer the legislature even when something's uncertain. So if there are competing bodies of research out there, maybe there's only one study that goes against the majority of others, the court will say it's not our decision to weigh that research. We'll let the legislature do it. And if you read the opinion from Justice Roberts' opinion, kind of throughout the concurrences, that's what they at least claim they're doing. There's uncertainty in this area. We're not drawing a research conclusion. We're going to let the legislature in Tennessee draw that conclusion. That's their role, not ours.
What the court also said was that the law, the majority said, the law does make distinctions, but not based upon sex or trans status, but only on two things, age and medical diagnosis. I guess my reading was that they were, and Sotomayor's dissent sort of made the point that they were sort of twisting themselves around to try to get to their desired result.
Yeah, you have to do some, lawyers are accused of doing legal gymnastics. I think the court is definitely doing some Olympic level legal gymnastics to be able to say, I'm not denying you these treatments because you're transgender. And it's not even discrimination on the basis of transgender status, because you can be transgender. I'm just saying that if you need hormones or puberty blockers based on having gender dysphoria, that's being denied to you. It's not based on your sex, because it doesn't matter what sex you are. If your reason for taking these treatments is to have a body consistent with your gender identity, it doesn't matter if you were biologically born a man, a woman. We're treating all sexes the same.
Okay, so to get further into the weeds, both sides discussed the Bostock case, and there was a lot of talk on the right, in the majority, about Thomas felt like we don't even need to engage with Bostock, and Roberts was, and some of the others were like, well, we'll talk about Bostock and why it doesn't apply. So can you explain what Bostock is and why the court decided to avoid it?
Yeah. What's interesting about Bostock is that the majority of the Supreme Court and Justice Gorsuch, who's part of the conservative majority on this Supreme Court, they said that our civil rights laws that prohibit employment discrimination do protect transgender people, because discrimination against transgender people is sex discrimination. So they cut through this really strained legal argument you were just taking us through when the court was making. They were able to cut through that and say, based on the language of Title VII that prohibits employment discrimination, this is still sex discrimination. So that kind of reasoning was at issue in that case, and Bostock might have been a reason that the court took a different path today. The Bostock opinion and Justice Gorsuch, who wrote it, really said it had to do with the very specific words of Title VII. And some of the dissenters pointed out there may be specific differences, but they're not meaningful differences. But there was that textual limitation to the Bostock decision. I think what's kind of amazing about today's opinion is that the majority didn't let the reasoning in Bostock get it in the way of their strained reasoning today. They also didn't turn around and overrule or undermine Bostock. And so people were concerned about that as well. We could lose our employment discriminations for transgender people in the workplace. And I think with today's decision, you have a very strong majority for sure in support of the Bostock decision as it applies to employment discrimination, and leaving open broader applications in other contexts.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt. Continuing my conversation with Brad Sears, the Judge Rand Schrader Distinguished Scholar of Law and Policy at the Williams Institute. There was this range of possibilities that the Supreme Court could go with, and one of them was to say the Equal Protection Clause does not cover sex discrimination. That's sort of one extreme. And then the other, of course, would be to follow Bostock and say, no, this is sex discrimination, and it's not legal. But they took a middle ground.
This is a devastating opinion impacting hundreds of thousands of youth and families that are now really, I think, faced with making a decision about, am I going to ask my child to change who they are? Or are we going to change where we live? I think that's the decision facing a lot of families today. They don't get to be hopeful about future decisions, because they have to make decisions across the short adolescence of their child. And so that, I think, is really the painful decision, the painful impacts of this decision today. Thinking longer term, I think there are some positive things you can pull out of this decision. People need to work to earn a living. There are protections still in place for transgender people in the workplace. There are other legal arguments available to transgender people, including under the Equal Protection Clause. This court did not decide whether gender identity was a status protected for heightened scrutiny. And there was some discussion about the types of discrimination that transgender people face. It was very much about minors and medical treatment. And so does not apply to adults. But Justice Roberts even had some language that would indicate, okay, if I'm living in one of the states and I can't gender-affirming care, but I want to go to school and use the name that's comfortable with me and the pronouns, this opinion hasn't decided that either. So there's still room for other arguments. And I think one of the most reassuring things I see about this opinion is that if you look at the actions by the precedent, they are based on transgender people. Like, transgender people don't exist. There are only two binary sexes. To the extent there are people saying that they're transgendered, they either have a mental health issue, or in the case of the military, literally the executive order says they're committing fraud on the military. This opinion is devastating, but it starts with one short, simple sentence that there are 1.6 million transgender people in the United States, and it defines what being transgender means. To me, that seems like a clear rejection of the Trump administration's portrayal of transgender people as either confused or people who are trying to commit fraud on others around them.
In her dissenting opinion, Justice Sonia Sotomayor accused her conservative colleagues of abandoning transgender children and their families to political whims. And she said the decision will do irrevocable damage to the Equal Protection Clause and invite legislatures to engage in discrimination by hiding blatant sex classifications in plain sight. American Civil Liberties Union attorney Chase Strangio, the transgender man who argued the case before the High Court last December, had this reaction. "The ruling is a devastating loss for transgender people, our families, and everyone who cares about the Constitution," he said. "Although this is a painful setback, it does not mean that transgender people and our allies are left with no options to defend our freedom, our health care, or our lives." The court left undisturbed Supreme Court and lower court precedent that other examples of discrimination against transgender people are unlawful. "We are determined as ever to fight for the dignity and equality of every transgender person, and we will continue to do so with defiant strength, a restless resolve, and a lasting commitment to our families, our communities, and the freedom we all deserve." I'd like to thank Brad Sears, founding director of the Williams Institute, for sharing his expertise for this program. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Ava Davis and Michael LeBeau and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was David Hunt. The SABT Choir, Styx, Eric Borchard, and Sean McGuire performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Yavanna Foundation, Richard Merck, and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on KDUR Durango, Colorado, 3ECB Croydon, Victoria, WADR Janesville, Wisconsin, and a wide array of community, terrestrial, and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.